Oh, I see, because it's sun. Harihi Om. Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhi Tamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. What are we up to?
Topic 15?
And 12-4.
12-4, things inherently pure.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we covered that 12-4. Because there's not enough in here to give the detail. Because this is more of the detail. We mentioned some things were inherently pure, like flies. The fly lands on, you don't have to take a bath. Things like that. The horse, like that. Laws concerning women. Topic 13. So always dependent. So then there's that verse that is always quoted by Srila Prabhupada. Woman is always under the protection of either the father, the son, or the husband. They shouldn't be independent. Because when they're independent, then the natural tendency is to, emotions will tend to be more, more up and down, you know, the stability, emotional stability becomes less because of that. There's not, the security is not there. Women are, when there's security, then they feel very comfortable. When there's not, then they have problems. So then there always must be that kind of mood of security. So then there's always someone there that's responsible. So that's why they always must be dependent. Then they're always cheerful, clever, careful, and economical. So these are the moods that they and activities they must be, you know, see to. Is that if they're cheerful, because if one is involved with women, they're actually the ones that set the mood. It means that the husband or the father or the son will set the general field, but the mood within that field will be set by the women. So if they're happy, everyone's happy. If they're not happy, no one's happy. Therefore, then trained woman always endeavors to always be cheerful, even if she has a problem, even if she's in anxiety, she still will present the mood of cheerfulness, because then the children will be peaceful, you know, the husband will be able to focus on what's going on, everything like that. The mood is good, like that. It doesn't mean that if there's a problem, it's not discussed, but it just means that if she's upset, it's not that the whole world has to be upset with her. It means the untrained woman, that's the common thing, how they like to behave. Because they figure it's their right. If they're upset, then why anybody else is not upset? You know, everybody should know about it. Everybody should share it like that. So that's one thing, is that it's there in the form that is appropriate, then that's discussed and it's worked out, and whatever their anxieties have to be cleared, that's the man's business. But the general mood of interaction is cheerful. Clever, they're already clever. The shloka is four times as clever. So then with that four times, that cleverness, then they should use that to get all the duties done. How to best get everything done. You know, this idea they don't know how to do anything, can't do anything, this and that. No, that's not. That's just bimbapa. Is that they know how to do things. And they're very clever. So then they should use that cleverness, you know, for in the proper way, for righteous development, and, you know, the spiritual and religious development. Careful means they always have to be sensitive. It means women are sensitive, but it doesn't necessarily mean to others. Right? The sensitive, always sensitive to anything connected with themselves. It means everybody's will be like that. But in women it'll be more extreme. Their sensitivity is more extreme, because anything to deal with their senses or their emotions, the experience always has a very strong effect upon them. So everything is just, you know, much more exaggerated. So then in that exaggeration, then they have to be careful, because otherwise, and then they say things, do things that it doesn't really appear to be a big deal. But many times what they've done is very disturbing to others. So you always have to be very, very careful about that.
And we're careful about being careful.
You know? So then that way then they won't do something that they wish they hadn't done later. Otherwise it's a very common thing. You know, they'll be happy or be upset, they'll do something, say something that they shouldn't have, afterwards then they feel they shouldn't, then it takes it that way, and then you gotta explain it. So it just keeps going back and forth. In other words, the whole life becomes a soap opera. So the whole point is, soap operas are great on the television, but they're not really great in actual, in day-to-day interactions. You know? Inside may be a soap opera, but you have to be very careful in how it's dealt. Let me say why we have to be careful. Then bring that woman and, you know, says, well, what's the big deal? Why can't we just be natural? Says, okay, that same woman who's saying that, or anybody who says that, if they really want something, and there's somebody that they know is the person they can get it from, they don't come up to them like a bull in a china shop. They come up very carefully, very planned, and exactly say only what should be said and the way it should be said, because they want to get something. So this, when he says, I just want to do what I want to do, that means you don't care for anybody else. So that's insensitive. So that's never, self-centered insensitivity is never a good quality in any culture, anywhere, or in any strata. It's just low class. That's all. You know, so that's why carefulness is important. And economical means how much money they have, only that much they spend. Otherwise, desires are unlimited. One's filled and another one. You say, oh, we need this. And then, okay, then you get that. But as soon as they get that, they figure out that there's other varieties of that, that this one would have been better. You know? Like that. So it always would be, they're never satisfied. Oh, it's not, you know, and then they see something else that's better than that. So it's always a constant development. So then economical means that we have this much money, we only spend that much money. Right? If the wife puts the family in debt, then that's a problem. That's her fault. Because the money of running of the house is handed over to her to run. The day-to-day expenses in the house, she takes manages. So if she puts it in debt, it means she's spending more than she has. You know? So like that, then she has to be careful. So these ways then also keep them very busy. Makes them austere, makes them thoughtful, you know, makes them practical, you know, and makes them nice to be with. Because they're cheerful, they do everything properly. They're clever, they get things done. So then it's the whole house then becomes pleasant. Under the care of the husband, faithful to the deceased husband. So then if the husband dies, then that's still the connection. And whatever piety and that he has, she will share it. If he goes to heavenly planets, if she's chaste, she'll go there. If he goes back to Godhead, she'll go. So that element, so they need to be faithful. Because if they're not faithful, then that connection is lost and all those benefits are lost. And then, the character won't be so good, because then they go from this one to that one to that one to that one. So their mind will always be disturbed. It will always become very materialistic. And then going back to Godhead, or in any way elevating yourself, becomes very difficult. So that faithfulness to the deceased husband is important. Yeah. So any time is that.
And it's there's no remarriage for.
Generally, if it's been a proper marriage, there's children, and the husband dies, then technically there shouldn't be. One thing, if there wasn't children, and he died, then it's another consideration, especially if she's young. But if she's older, then generally. You know, so that would be the natural thing. In the Western culture, then they don't mind it. So. You know, if it happens, these things happen. But the whole idea is that as soon as that happens, then they're connected with the other person. There's no connection with the last person. Because whoever they marry, they take on that gotra. So then if they marry someone else, they're out of that family. They're not connected to that family anymore. You know, it's just like you have, you know, the girl. She's an aristocratic family. She marries nobility. She becomes a princess. She divorces the prince and then hangs out with the businessman. She's a business person. She's not nobility anymore. So she just goes with whoever she's with. Okay. So therefore, that's why if they go somewhere else, they lose all that. So that should be understood, is that they can do it if they want, but they lose that connection. It's not that they can avail themselves of it, because they're in a different family. And then the children then also you have to see, because with that father, then there's been standards, there's been this, we marry another man, it's got to go the way that man says. If she's a proper wife, then he sets the pace of the family, then the children have to grow up in a completely different environment. But the problem is the boy is in the gotra of his father, not in the new father. His nature is there, so there'll be a conflict. So these kind of things will be, it throws up questions that are difficult. If you're in such a disturbed atmosphere, then maybe they're not a problem. You know, maybe it's not a problem because the atmosphere is so disturbed, and the individuals, you know, you don't have the kind of like tradition to back it up and the family to back it up, then it might work. I've seen many, you know, remarried devotees that are quite peaceful and do their service very nicely and everything goes on. But it's not necessarily guaranteed. But it shouldn't be a standard. Because it's like this. It's one of those things that it's all based on mentality. You know, it's just like this. Let's say you have some senior devotees and they have some assistants. And the senior men are, you know, they're very close assistants. They always travel with them, do everything with them. So the senior men are discussing something very confidential. Now those assistants, because it's their conversation, those assistants are just busy doing whatever they're doing. They may even happen to be in the room. They don't mind. But as soon as they kind of tune into the conversation, then immediately it's not their conversation that's going out of the room. So it's all mentality. So then you see is that someone doesn't know, doesn't have the facility or this or that, and then they end up in a situation that may not be the ideal situation. So there's remarriage and these kind of things. That's okay. But if it's accepted that it's normal, that's abnormal. It's understood this is not ideal, but the situation is tough, is that they're just too disturbed, too unprotected, and here's affords an opportunity. And it is a, you know, good standard and everything. Then it may be, this may not be ideal, but okay, it'll fly. But if they think, no, this is their right to do this, then they're just malicious. Then they'll blow flash. Because then, there's no guarantee they'll keep that one together. Because the point is Prabhupada says, basically the family staying together or not is the call of the woman. If she doesn't want to keep it together, it doesn't stay together. So it's based on that, basically. When they decide, I don't want to get involved in this, then it's over. Like that. So it's basically in their hand. If you check even divorce, most of the divorces are filed by the women. So it's, and much of the time it would be one, you know, so you have to decide, you have to see whether it is from just they can't handle that situation, or they can't handle the situation, but they would continue this situation if there's no better alternative. This is better than nothing. So it either has to come to the point where it's not better than nothing, it's worse than nothing. So then they divorce, and they don't have an alternative. But at least it's not in the negative. Or they found a better person they'd rather be married to, so they dump the guy that's of less better than nothing for the guy that's more better than nothing. Like that. So these kind of mentalities are very dangerous because it's so easy for the women to do that, because it's just they're going to do this and then some other opportunity comes up, bang, immediately they're into it. Totally into it. They can change anything in a moment's notice. So that's why the tradition and all these things that are stable are so important. So that at least it's always progressive, but because of their nature, then it's always kind of dynamic. You know, because they always want variety. Like they're cooking. They cook within the tradition, but within the tradition there's so much variety. They'll always cook variety within the tradition. If they don't have a tradition, and one day they cook this, one day that, well, one day out to the restaurant, one day sent out for pizza, one day this, one day, you know, it's just, you won't know what you get. If they have a tradition, they'll stick within that. And then there'll be variety within that. In any case, there's going to be variety. They can't handle the same thing for very many times. They get bored real fast. Like that, real fast. But if they have a tradition and they're trained in it enough, then they have a broad enough scope that they can dress and do everything and eat and form activities within that that are so varied that they keep themselves busy. If not, they'll just turn to anything, whatever comes into the mind. So that's the whole idea is, and that drives them crazy along with everybody else. So if they have something stable and all that, that variety will be created within that. So then the point is if they know is you have to be married, then within that they will create the environment that they'll keep it together. But they think it doesn't really matter, I can, you know, try it, and if it works, great. If it doesn't work, then it doesn't matter. Then they can go through quite a few people. They go through quite a few people. I mean, all you have to do is go down to, you know, any university in the world and talk to the, you know, first year girls there, you know, they're what, 18, 19. Ask them how many boys they've been through since they were 11, 12. You know, it can be quite a few. But if there's a thing is you get one chance, then they'll make the best of it. You know, because that's the thing, is that women may do anything, do so many things, but if you tell them, well, that's it, you know, you tell them, hey, don't do that. You know, well, this, that, and they may do, oh, I forgot, or, you know, why not this, or what's wrong with this, or, you know, just go on and on and on and on, whatever they want. You tell them, you do like that, I'm out of here, you know, and you can live alone. Bang, it changes that second. So that's the whole thing, it's just a matter of if because gain and safety is so much of a reality for them. If they think that by doing this, I'll get gain and safety, they'll do anything. They'll change anything. Say what they like, they'll change anything. Men, no. Women, yes. They can change. Right? It means you have a group of people living in a village there in a particular culture and that, another culture comes in, you know, wipes out all their men, takes all the women off back to their country, they become people in that country. Right? The girl is in this family, she marries into that family, she takes up all the traditions of that family. Just the way it goes. It's really interesting how it's the boys are less attached, they stay in their family. Girls are more attached, they have to leave the family. It's a really far out kind of a... So nowadays in the modern I see, I can't say outside, but at least devotees, they try to keep, not even not devotees, but I mean I know the devotee area. The girl's family always tries to keep the girl, and they offer the boy come live with them and everything like that. You know, it's not uncommon. Means the boy marries the girl, takes the girl away from her family to his family, and that's where she is. And she'll sometimes visit and this and that. But the shots are called on the boy's side. But nowadays, because of the attacks of women's attachment, they don't want to let the girl go, so they want to expect the boy to come be under the control of the girl's house. Which is exactly opposite of Dharma. It's against the maximum principle. So what happens is the women become the men and the men become the women. And it's all just for gain and safety. You know, so one has to avoid those kind of things. So all these principles is put in place, it makes the mind focused and peaceful. So that's therefore then the point is that you only have this one time and that's it. And this marriage breaks down, you don't get married again. You're alone. You know? Then it's kind of like, okay, I'll make it work. Because they're clever. They're four times more clever than men. It means if there's somebody who can work it out, it's them. like that. Man is just, you know, women go nuts and he just sits there and doesn't know what's going on, you know, like that. But the women, you know, things get nuts, you know. If it's beneficial for them, that they'll get profit out of not knowing what to do, then they'll do that. But if it's like no one else is going to do it, bang, they suddenly just become so dynamic and just get everything done. So it's just a matter of which one's going to give more profit, being stupid or being clever. You know, it's like the cliche, the dumb blonde. Dumb blonde gets anything she wants. She just presents herself as dumb. But that's cleverness. Because she's so clever, therefore she presents herself as dumb. Right? Because she knows the men are dumb enough to, you know, relate with that, and therefore she controls them. That kind of thing. So there's a whole dynamic going on there. So if they know this is it, then they'll make it work. You see Indian families before, when I came to India, you know, then in the 70s, divorce was rare. I'd never heard of it. The families we moved up from, we never heard of it. Heard of husbands sometimes dying, girls being back at their father's house. You'd always hear of families breaking up and weirdo things down in the common class of people, but not in the trained people, not in your aristocracy. You'd never hear of it. Nowadays, it's fashionable. You know, the West does it, so we want to be like the West, so therefore we do it. They just do it because they think they're supposed to. You know, they watch the soap operas and then make their life like the soap operas. They think that the soap operas are the way you're supposed to live. Because that's, you know, they're developed from the West and it's real life. But no. The West is just watching. Who knows why, but, you know, it's something that makes noise, it moves, so I guess it creates some emotion. But they take it more real. So that's the thing, is if they understand that there's a one shot, they'll make it work. They'll work to the best they can. So nowadays they have that, but if they don't have the training, then it becomes very difficult. So you can't say, well, it doesn't work. No, it's lack of training. You know, this is a science. You have man has a nature, woman has a nature, and if they're properly matched, and you know how the science, it'll work. You know, it'll work. Like that. But the problem is that much of the time there's no training. So if there's no training, you have someone who's not trained and they fall into difficulties, and so remarriage is a question, then you can understand it because they don't know. But it doesn't mean they're going to stay like that. They have to know. They have to learn. Otherwise, they just go on and on and on and on and on again. So generally what happens is, you know, after, you know, a couple of marriages and all that, then time and the passions go down because they're older, then life becomes a little easier. You kind of get it together more. Like that. So they have learned. They have, you know, they've learned by the time they're 40, 50 years old. A bit late. You know? But it's not. Otherwise, why would a man be going off, leaving his wife, going off with someone else when he's 50? He's supposed to take one crop. Be going off with someone because he can't handle it. You know, 20 years of nagging and bad behavior, whatever it is that bothers him. So both he's untrained, so he doesn't know how to deal, so he's not satisfying the wife. The wife's not being satisfied, she doesn't know how to deal, so therefore he upsets the man. And then after a while, then it doesn't work. Okay. So there has to be, therefore training is very, very important. It's not good.
Heavier?
No, it's not any heavier. It's not any different. But the thing is he took sannyas. If he's a good sannyasi in that, I mean, that lady's got it made.
The lady
is in a very good situation. I mean, the husband's preaching, doing so many nice things. There's every chance that he's got the best shot of going back to Godhead. And if she chased to him, she gets all the benefits. All the benefits for his preaching is shared with her if she's chased. If she's not, then they're not. She gets all the benefits. Yeah. When he takes it, he's socially dead. So the same point is any credit he has, she shares. It's automatic. The wife just gets. It means the good things that the wife does, the husband doesn't necessarily get. He gets protected because of her chastity. That's fair. He's protected by her because of her chastity. But the particular benefit she's gotten doesn't mean he gets them. But what he gets, she shares. It's automatic. So it would be worse from the woman's point. Socially, it's not any different if he died or he took sannyas. It's just that if he died, then he, you know, at least, you know, as far as you're able to ascertain, you won't understand that you've married someone else. But if you took sannyas, then he, you know, he knows. And so he may appreciate or not, and then, you know, live with that. But, you know.
So in this context, like Krishna says that when they go and the Raj and even Krishna to attain the highest perfection, it's like the special opportunity for women there was they can get the highest perfection if the men get it, but they cannot get it.
Correctly, yeah. They can also buy their own sadhana and everything. Yeah. So that's the thing is, women have two ways to get it. Either by just being, if they themselves have the focus and that spiritual mood, that degree, they can get it by their own. But if not, which is many times the case, just they have a natural religious mood, you know, and that kind of sentiment, and the attachment is there, so they get attached, they're attached to the husband and family. So if they're attached to someone who's spiritual, then taking shelter of that person at the time of death, then they go back, they get whatever the benefit. If they went back to Godhead, they get it. So they have both. But the man doesn't. He has to get, you know, the spiritual on his own. He can't think of his life and go back to Godhead. They'll take both of his
dreams. I heard
it
also when man and woman marry, the woman actually says to the man that I will come to your house, I will come to your lifestyle. Whatever you do, any religious activity or past activity, you could share that half of that to me. But whatever I get, that's only for me. You won't share it. You won't have to share it. And I won't have to give anything.
There's no specific mantra. I don't know, maybe some text, but in some of it, they might use that. But it's just understood is that the sinful reaction of the dependent goes to whoever they're dependent upon, not necessarily the piety.
Because if
the woman doesn't anything bad,
it
reaction to
that,
because
the husband suffers.
Yeah.
But
if
the husband
does
it, also suffers.
Yeah. That's the point. Is that's why it's said, is the wife still, you know, will serve and take care of a husband who has bad qualities, because she is only getting benefit by behaving properly.
Mm-hmm.
She's only advancing because of that. He may not be, but she is. Because she gets no bad reaction for it. Because whatever it is, because she's dependent upon him, however he engages her, the reaction is his. Like that. But if she has bad character, then the husband has to correct it because he gets the reaction, not her. So that's the thing. Like children. If they perform sinful activities, the reaction doesn't go to them, it goes to the parents. So it's the parents' duty to see that they're corrected and trained properly. So, in one sense, but I'm saying the situation is more difficult, that's why they're given more options. Because of the attachment and everything like that. So if they can make their attachment pious, then, and they throw that pious attachment onto someone who's spiritual, then they can go back to Godhead. But if they can take their attachment and transform it into attachment to Krishna, that's into spiritual attachment, then it's so strong. Like the gopis, there's not no philosophy that they're surrendering to Krishna and they're attracted and attached to Krishna. It's simply their feminine attachment, nature for attachment. Like that. So, therefore, in one sense, you see, that's why women are more religious. One, it's sentiment, you know, because religious principles work in the future. Mind. So, the emotions and all the attachment, everything is found there. So then it's a very pleasant area for them to work within. Like that, more than the intellectual. Sensual gets old quick with them. unless there's variety, the senses get old for them also. That's why there's so much variety. Like you see, men wear, you know, white dhotis, or if they have a border, there's a few kinds of border and a little bit of variety. But it's not much. But you look at saris, you look at a shop full of saris, you won't find two of the same saris. You know? And there's hundreds of shops. How many shops are selling men's dhotis? How many shops are selling saris? Like that. So that's the point, is that they need variety. So okay. So then that within that field, so the sensuality isn't a great place for them. The religious platform is a good place for them. Because if they do get onto the sensual platform, then they go real wild. Because they have to create variety, so it has to be variety of men, variety of activities, you know, just constantly changing. But otherwise, then it's much easier for them to fall back on the religious platform, because that's stable. So you see that they Prabhupada always mentions the man should discuss with his religious wife, because that's generally the platform that's comfortable for them. A man who's sense-controlled and a religious wife, that makes a good combination. So she may get really spiritual or not. If she does, great. If she doesn't, as long as the husband is really spiritual, then she'll benefit.
On that point, what happened when the woman, she's interested in spiritual life, but the husband is my father, and my mother, she's my father, he's
not so much in the she still performs the duty. Yeah, chastity is there, not so much. No, because that's her. I mean, maybe it's there, that's just the devotional service. That's not coming through her. She's doing it, but it comes there. But generally the tendency is, if the women are more religious and the man's not, the men don't mind. You know? But if men are more religious and their wife is not, then generally it's a problem for them. Like that. But it's very, very common. The women are always going to the temple or to the church or doing a little whatever it is, worship and all that. It's just kind of like by the men considered as a ladies thing. They like this. They do it. It keeps them peaceful or happy. You know, anything that keeps them happy makes them money. You know? So it's not really a big problem. You know? Like that. So then she just performs the Krishna conscious duties and kind of carries on like that and it works. Like that. Husbands, you know, it's just like Prabhupada's sister teaching her. Then her husband wasn't a devotee at all. Wasn't a devotee at all. But she performs the duties nicely and everything. Like that. I think her children were more devotional than the father. Because they associated her. So they picked it up from her, the devotional mood. But I think the father didn't have much devotion in it at all, is what I understand. Yeah, because you pick it up from the mother, like that. Because the relationship between the mother and the son is very strong. The daughter and the father, you know. So sometimes you find that the daughter will take on the father's mood, the son will take on the mother's mood. That's why in the Vedic culture it's so important to see that the woman is good. Because the woman's good, the son's good. The woman's not good, then the son's not good. If they're not good, then what's the use? Because you know, the sons will create that nice... Means they'll be able to take care of other men. You know, and further, you know, continue the traditions. You know, the community traditions and that. Because they'll pick them up. So the father should ensure that that environment is there, then the women, you know, make it happen. And so then the children can happen.
Okay.
Not for her, because it's his insistence, so she's doing it, he gets the karma. She's performing her duty. That's her duty, is to take care. So she does that. Then she doesn't get any reaction for performance of the duty. and there is no sin. You know, like that. It's just like in the animal sacrifice. The Brahmins are killing the animal. There's no sin for killing the animal. It's not according to religious principles. Doesn't mean there's not a reaction, but there's no sin. Reaction means is then, you know, there means they're doing it on behalf of the king. So then the king, this lifetime, he's killing the animal. Then in the future, that animal, he'll be the horse, and the horse will be the king. But there's no sin. No one will go to hell for it, and both will go to heavenly planets. Because it's done according to religious principles. And here, she's following religious principles. He's not. So he may have problems, but she won't.
So it's the life that she's responsible for everyone, and she can, as a congregation, she can cook the meat and serve the meat. It doesn't stand up with the 7,000 people.
Not exactly, because it may, the person who cooks and who serves has reaction, but that reaction goes to the husband.
Okay. It's there, but it should not pay.
Yeah. It means reaction's always there, it's just who gets it. You know? Only Krishna, he makes it go away. You know? Because Krishna doesn't take the sin. Krishna just, he's pure, it just goes away. Like the sun purifies an impure place. It's not that the sun takes it, it's just by his power it purifies. But on the amongst mortals, then it's got to go somewhere. Just like the horse is a horse. They're a horse because of sin, right? You don't become a horse because of great pious activities. You become a horse because of that. Maybe it's mixed, so therefore you're a good horse, you know, or you're a horse fit for sacrifice. But in any case, you're a horse. So between a horse, the next birth is not human, right? There's some more births. Cow, monkey, or lion or tiger. Their next birth is human. So there's still something in between. So that means those births still remain. So that karma has to be removed, you know. So then what happens is that the animal is sacrificed, it goes to the heavenly planets. So that means that it immediately attains human birth. So the karma that is there between the situation now and that human birth that they'll obtain, that has to be suffered by somebody. Right? The activity was done, the reaction is there, someone has to suffer. The normal thing is the person who did the activity. But in this case, through the sacrifice, then the Yajurman can take that. So the horse is elevated, and by the sacrifice they're elevated, but still that little bit of reaction is still there. That's taken by the king. So Karmakanda doesn't talk about these so much. Then the Jnanakanda talks about this stuff, because their point is to cut karma. But karma is to encourage you to do pious karma rather than impious karma. Because otherwise the nature is to be sin. So if you can see that there's loss with sin and profit with piety, then the general person will become pious. But the real thing is bhakti, of course. Because that's the greatest piety and the greatest scale. That's real piety. That's how loving can be described.
An issue that comes up from the conditions was besides the diet and what you eat, which seems to be clear for women.
Yeah, it means the thing is, it's not that she can't be clever and figure out vegetarian things to cook that are so palatable that he starts to eat more of those and less of the non-veg things. This is the cleverness. And then those vegetarian things she can offer, then he's taking prashad. Though some of the stuff he's taking is not prashad. You know? So, like that, she can, that's why it says cleverness. She can use that and then the house will improve. You know? But you have to see if she can put her foot down and all that, and sometimes they do, and they can make the house vegetarian. But if she's not in that kind of control, then it may not work. You know?
The other issue is like sex.
Well, that's the other thing. Maybe through the loss of sex, she can get the husband to be vegetarian. But, otherwise I'm out of here. And the guy, well, okay, I'd rather have the wife and be vegetarian because you can still have sex. You know? So same thing, the reaction goes to the husband.
Yeah, so what if have a case in mind from a foundation in which if the husband was becoming married, and the wife didn't have to do anything, and he wanted to tell the principles of the sex, she wasn't willing to. So there was some, I heard speaking with him that there was some importance and some devotee to somehow satisfy the wife. So
but what does that mean? That way is one way. So it's the question we were talking about the other way is where the woman wants to follow the man doesn't.
Yeah, that's why I want to understand how it does work both ways. Is that with the woman?
But the man, still there's duty to take care, but the point is sex that is not necessarily the answer. See, the point is for women it's intimacy. So intimacy doesn't have to mean sex. The point is that it may have developed into that due to a lack of other emotional interaction and other kind of like close dealings like that, that's become the problem, because it's guaranteed you got to be intimate to have sex. You know, it's guaranteed there's going to be some close physical contact like that. So then they may become attached to that, but the sex itself is not necessarily that exciting for women. For them, it's the intimacy, the closeness, and that kind of thing. You know? Because much of the time, they don't get much out of it. But at least it's something. So then what it is the man has to see is he taking care? Is he close enough with her? Is he dealing with that? So he has to see, okay, maybe not so much sex, but maybe he has to be a little more kind and, you know, touch her more often or give her a hug or something like that that will create that atmosphere of intimacy. But it doesn't have to go into that. Because that's not the big deal for women. Men are more into the sex than the women. They only get into it if that's the only way they've found to create intimacy. You know? But otherwise, the activity of sex itself, they're much more into making out than they are into sex.
Making out,
kissing, embracing, that kind of stuff. It's what's dealing with the upper part of the body, they're more into that. Just being with the lower end, that's generally the men are more into that. For them, it's not a big deal. So he has to actually review what it is that the woman is actually looking for. He can discuss it. Is it actually the sex? What is it? And if he knows what he's talking about, how to inquire, then he can find out what it is. And you'll probably just find this the intimacy. The modes in nature generally tend to take it towards sex, but it's not that it needs to be. I know there was one, Mataji was telling me, when she went to school, then in this university, then one of their classes was psychology. So one of the things that teacher particularly then wanted to bring out what was the most, you know, strongest impressions in one's life and stuff like that, or the strongest, you know, experiences and like that. So generally, you know, women, you know, there'll be some emotional things, but a lot of times these sensual things and emotional, it's mixed, because the women don't distinguish between sensual, emotional, and intellectual. It's like one room, three doors. Men, it's three different rooms. You know, you can be intellectual and not emotional or sensual. You can be emotional and not intellectual or sensual. You can be sensual and not emotional or intellectual. Women, it's not. It's one thing, just it emphasizes more of the one. And they always transfer, if it's intellectual, it's always what you call it, translated into emotion. The sensual is translated into emotion. Just like, they're not into the sex, this and that, but the guy is into it, so that means he has a need, and he can fulfill that need through her. That means she has a value. Therefore, she translates it as emotion. Well, he's simply looking at it as pure sensuality. But she's fulfilling his need for sensuality. Therefore, in her mind, it's something emotional. But it's coming through the medium of sensuality. The person is taking the time for them. He's giving a nice class. He's such a nice person. They'll always they turn into like that. It means it's not that they're not intellectual, but the taste that they'll get will be on that side. But it comes through that. So you find it means that that nature is there in women as a class, but you'll find some prefer, you know, they like a lot of, you know, that input coming in through intellect or through emotion or through senses. So that will be a difference. But that translation of it back into the emotion, that's just the way they work. You know? I mean, it's just like science, both sides of the brain work at once. So it's always it's always going on. Emotion's always happening.
So you were talking about the professor was doing that, or you were talking about the emotion?
Oh yeah, yeah. So then so naturally, because it was a class of just girls, then they get into a lot of this just about sex. And these are girls 18, 19 years old. They're fried with sex. They don't want to have any more sex. Doesn't mean that they won't, because the boys are into it. But themselves as a preference, they're fried with it. Because they're just so dry and nothing's going on there in the sex itself. But the exchange and this and that, you know, is there. So you have, does that make some sense? So for them, it's no big deal for them. They're much more interested in just the closeness, the intimacy, that man and husband and wife, you know, talking things through together, and that closeness of that, you know, companionship. And these are what's more valuable to them. But it's not understood, because they're a weird bunch. Like let's say the lady is dressed and she's revealing a lot. For her, it's sensuality. It's not sexuality. It's being sensual, it's being daring, bold, this, that, and the other ladies are, wow, that's what's good, that's what, you know, things like that. So they're actually doing it to please the women. Though the medium they're using is what's pleasing to men. So the principle is my value is more than yours because I am able to please the men more, but they're showing off to the other women. They're not actually doing it to the men. That's why when the men go over to them and, hey, honey, and they tell them, beat it. You know, like the look but don't touch. You know, they want you to look, because then the more you look, then as long as you don't get in the face. But you know, they go out like that, and the whole street looks at them. They feel good, but then they're powerful. But they don't want you to touch them, because they're not looking. They're not trying to get anything like that. It's just prestige amongst other women. I got it more than the other ones got it. So it's a whole, means their head is something that can't really be understood. But it's just, that's the way it is, you know. So these girls are pointing out that, you know, that, you know, just the sex thing is not really what they're into. They're more into the more intimacy and the closeness and like that. That's what they're looking for. You know, it's a common thing. Girls are always telling the boys to slow down. You know, the boys move too quick. You know, because they want to savor all the intimacy, the movement, this and that. Okay. So that's the... And sex is just a natural culmination of that. So if the other's been so intimate and so, you know, moved to the right, that naturally that comes. But it seemed to them all the same emotional light. But if you just go to sex without the romance, to them they get nothing out of it. Because to them only the romance has any taste. So sex may be part of the romance, but it doesn't necessarily include it. Romance can be without sex. That makes sense. So that's the whole. It's In other words, they're very different than men. Very different. So the common platform is duty. So duty is a common platform of men and women, then they can both do those things, and they may interpret it and perceive it according to their own mentality, but it doesn't matter because the duty is being performed.
Duty could be sadhana, what do you mean by duty?
Means here, because we're talking this, because here it's the interaction between the men and the women, you know, in this context. It means those duties that the wife has towards the husband and the husband has towards the wife, you know, and both of them have towards the family, you know, the children and the bigger family, the community, and then themselves as devotees, and you know, so it's the whole picture, all the whole duties. Because if they're going to get married, then that has to be recognized, that there is interaction duties between man and wife. If they're not married, then they only have to worry about them and the spiritual masculine community, you know, based on that kind of platform, on sadhana and service like that. But if marriage is there, then there's duties that the husband has towards the wife and children, that the wife has towards the husband and children, the children have towards their parents. You know, like that. And they have to fit into the community. You know. So it means performance of those duties, then they have a common platform, it all goes smoothly and nice, and then everybody's happy. Whether you understand why the other person's doing it or not, that doesn't matter. Because men will think in one way, women in another, and the twain doesn't meet. It meets at the point of religious principle. That's sustainable. It can meet at the platform of sensuality also, but that's not sustainable.
Meet in the sense of activity, it's still a different perception.
Yeah, of course. There's a different perception. But I'm just saying, it's a common ground for interaction. Like that. So of all of them, then the safest and most stable is that of duty, which is the emotional platform. That you're performing it, you know, that the husband has that commitment to taking care of his of his duties towards the wife's needs and the family's needs. Then from that, wife is great, she's performing the same way, then they have a mutual respect and gratefulness towards each other. Because they take care of the children, and the children appreciate, and then they have that respect and that towards the parent. Okay, so then the whole thing works. Then, just because that's working nicely, it doesn't mean anything unless it's connected to Krishna. For us. If you're not a devotee, then that's good enough. Get you the heavenly planets. It's progressive. It's taking you up. But unfortunately, heavenly planets of the Brahman aren't that progressive. But as a devotee, then we want to get to the transcendental platform. These are mediums with which we can engage the conditioned nature. Conditioned nature is attached to material energy. Then by engaging in the material energy, it will create only the desire to do it again. Right? Karma. Karma, then, when you perform an activity, then there's two paths happening at once. You perform one activity of karma, then two things happen. One is the seed on which you acted to perform the activity sprouts. Right? That grows into a plant, which gives you the fruit. Yeah. But at the same time, is during the activity, it creates another seed. So any activity you do, the desire to do it again is created. So if you do pious, it creates the desire to do more pious. If you do sinful, it creates the desire to do more sinful. So that's always, always created. So for the devotee, then you perform the pious activity, then desire to do it again is created. But you connect it to Krishna, then that desire seed won't fruitify. You'll only get the benefit of the activity done. But at the same time, so you get the benefit of the karma, but you get the result of having done it for Krishna with knowledge, and that's the aspect again, you get liberated. And because it's done for Krishna, you get bhakti. So you get fruit on all three platforms, karma, jnana, and bhakti. So the karmi only gets it on karma, the jnani only gets it on jnana. But the devotee gets it on all three. So he gets the fruits of karma, at the same time that same activity gets him liberation, and that same activity takes him forward towards devotion towards Krishna. So the process of bhakti is so much better. So that's why if it's not connected to Krishna, it doesn't really mean anything to us. It's nice, it's pious, we move in the pious because it said the four kinds of pious people surrender. So therefore, you know, better the pious than the impious in that way. But at the same time, as the devotional process is so great that even simple people can take it up. So they take the shot and come in contact and they pick it up. But if they don't change, we don't associate. So the pious person may take it up. that sometimes a pious person gets so bewildered by the benefits of his piety that he doesn't think about it. They're satisfied just to be nice people. So that's a problem. That we can explain. Is that what you said?
A religious person has bhakti, sometimes she'll talk or use this expression around Islam and Islamic and national music of bhakti, but when he's telling us of bhakti, like prayer of bhakti, so that also comes under the same umbrella. You know, are you saying that you're bhakti, bhakti, that being bhakti, or is it just religious? I mean,
what would be here is that you have two means to understand it. Then, see, this depends how your, what is your perception on bhakti. There's two main views. One is specifically for the person trying to advance, and the other is for encouraging others. Right? It means one is specifically what you use for yourself or those that you're directly trying to make advance. The other is for others. You know, so it's like this. The one that's for yourself, then bhakti actually begins at prema. Anything below that technically is not bhakti. So, but bhava is pretty close. It's the seed of bhakti, the bud, but it hasn't opened. Only when it opens, then it's called bhakti. The seed, but it hasn't. It's just like you have a seed. You know, it has a potential to become a banyan tree, but it's not a banyan tree. It's a seed. When it becomes, when it sprouts, then you say, "Here's a banyan tree." And below that sadhana bhakti is somebody aspiring for bhakti. So technically, then that keeps one, you know, moving forward. Because otherwise, the tendency is that you do a little something and then you think you become big, you know. And he mentions that, you know, it's like the first utsamayi, you know, it's like the kid goes to school the first day and learns A, B, C, and he comes home and thinks he's a great scholar. Like that, you know, because he knows unlimitedly more than he did than the day before when he knew nothing. You know, so knowing three letters means he knows, you know, unlimited amounts, right? You know. So there's that possibility is that people think they become conditioned to the mode of goodness and think, you know, I'm doing fine. When it's kind of like, hey, you still got a little ways to go. The other is then where where Baladev, he makes, you know, the presentation, because this is how you present it to others, because you tell the neophyte devotee that, yeah, bhakti starts at prema, you know, and you're light years away from that. And it's kind of like, okay, we'll just pack up and go back home to mommy. You know? So therefore, then it's, because it's connected to bhakti, therefore it's categorized as bhakti. But technically speaking, until initiation, until actually initiation, it's all bhakti sukriti. When you actually surrender and take initiation from bona fide spiritual master, from that point, then that's actual sadhana bhakti. Before that was the sukriti that brought you to that point. Because the sukriti became great enough, then you got faith. More than you took up the association of devotees. More than you... So at that time, you're considered a sampradaya devotee. Before that, you're considered an ordinary devotee. Initiation. You know? But at the same time, as you generally don't apply this principle so much on those who are, you know, have that determination to go back to Godhead and follow the process, because they're following all the sadhana and everything everybody else is. They just don't have the initiation. So you don't generally categorize it like that. But technically, that's what it is. You generally take that for those who haven't become serious. You're like, does that make sense? You know, people who associate devotees, I like doing devotional things, but they're not like determined to make that their their lifestyle. That's not their determination. It's there, they like it, they like doing it, they're enthusiastic doing it, you know, but they may or may not be regular, or they'll be regular a few things, but not really serious. You know, like that. So that's ordinary devotees. They're devotees, but they're ordinary. But once they've taken initiation, then they're considered self-adiac, and that means they're serious. But for us, because we have the temples of this, someone may be very as serious as a sampradayic, though he hasn't come to that platform. It's just a matter of time, because time is only there, and time is a mundane quality. You know, it's time and space. Therefore, the transcendentalists don't consider it. If they, with this determination and consciousness, keep this up, it's just a matter of time before they become pure devotee, before they attain prema. And says time doesn't and space doesn't matter to the transcendentalists. Therefore, they count them in the same category. They may be younger, but they still count it in that way. Therefore, the preacher then sees it in that light. So that's Baladevs. So Prabhupada mentioned that he dedicates the Gita to Baladevs, you know, purports. Because he's taking it in that mood. But for our own looking at ourselves, our own introspection, we take Vishwanatha. So we're applying on all others.
For our own
introspection. You know, in summing up our own spiritual life, we take Vishwanatha angles that to be the strictest. But when we apply it on others, then we use Baladevs. We inspire, because it's all considered bhakti. So therefore, sadhana bhakti still is counted as bhakti, but technically it's not. Because bhakti means love. Right? The sadhaka doesn't have love. Or it's not much developed. It's not the prominent thing.
Let's say, this is the first one. Let's say that when we show this, the mother with the bhakti, he calls it samayoga.
You could. You can take it from that angle. Because these are the forms of it. It's karma meaning. It's karma yoga in that it's activities that connect you to the Lord. But still, I'm sure that he doesn't call the chanting of the name within that. You know? But that's why we'll take Shravanam Kirtana Smaranam as the most essential. Padasevanam Archanam Dasyam. Those are, if you do it, it's nice. You know, but Sakyam Atma Nivedanam, then that's considered also. So they all kind of have their, depending on how technical details you're getting into. It means because the Shravanam Kirtan and Smaranam, that's there, that's going on eternally. You know, that is Mukhya. It means you perform that here, and it is directly transcendental. The other ones are also there, but they may have elements in them that are not necessarily transcendental. Like Padasevana, okay, then you respect the devotees, you wash the feet. Okay. Then, but the elements that you're using aren't transcendental. But it's being used for a transcendental purpose, therefore it becomes spiritualized. But the name is directly Krishna. The water that you're washing the feet of the devotees is not spiritual. After you've washed it, it becomes. But the name is directly spiritual. You remember Krishna is directly spiritual. So there's these fine distinctions that they make. It's only for certain aspects of analyzation or application of one's life. So depending on what is Ramanuja's angle, he'll present the same thing as you know all the other acharyas. But for the time, place, and circumstance, he'll use a particular angle to catch those particular people that will attract their minds. You know, but it'll be said the same thing, just like Prabhupada was saying, developing love for God is the real thing. Therefore, you'll see that element generally in most other religions. You know, as someone who's especially a theologian, they'll understand that principle. Some of the others just see the ritual. They may or may not understand. But generally, if you speak to theologians from any religious you can find a common platform, because religion comes from God. So there must be a common element. But the thing is how scientifically do they get that development of love of God into their life? That is where the Vedic culture then is outstanding. Because they get into everything. There's nothing that's not covered. And it's amazingly done in such a way that the form of it, even the non-devotees follow. Like that. It means how the culture is followed is exactly the same for the non-devotee as it is for the devotee. So all that you have to do is, if that non-devotee decides one day to become a devotee, he's already doing everything. He just has to change, put Krishna into whatever he's doing, directly. Otherwise, indirectly, he's worshipping the Lord through following the scriptures. He has his guru, he has his sadhana, you know, he follows the scriptures, you know, like this. So, you know, things are in place. Now it's just a matter of putting Krishna there, that, you know, the scriptures are about Krishna, the Buddha's talking about Krishna. His activities are connected in that way. Then it becomes very nice. So the other religion, they don't have, it's just like, let's say, we take this, we take Christianity. What is Christian dress? What is Christian food? What is a Christian lifestyle? How do they wake up? How do they go to bed? How do they go to the toilet? How do they take a bath? How do they set it up? There isn't any. It means what is there is pagan. That's the fun part. You know? Is that even though they are, the whole rest of the world are savages and pagans, but the Christian culture as is practiced, you know, since I think 400 AD is pagan. Roman Catholicism is Christianity applied over paganism. While the original Christianity was Christianity applied over Judaism. Means Christ was Jewish, his original disciples were Jewish, and so their medium of ritual was Judaism. But his point was to develop love for God. You know, don't get so caught up in the rituals that you forget God. That was his point. You know? So they used Judaism, and then Judaism fell by the wayside because as they expanded, the new people weren't brought into Judaism because somehow or another they don't work on the principle of preaching. If they had such a thing that everybody could have become Jews, then you probably wouldn't have Christianity. You would have Jews who accepted Christ as the Messiah and Jews that didn't. That's what you'd have. Because that's actually what it boils down to. The Jews all say the Messiah will come. Those that accepted Christ as the Messiah, they're Christians. Those that didn't, then they're not Christians. They're Jews. So then, that is there, but that Islam has something, Orthodox Judaism has something, it gets into what they eat and dress and stuff like that. It does get into a lot of details. But the others don't. Islam, I think, gets into some of it. Buddhism, strict, gets into some of it. But the application of it is the greatest and broadest in the Vedic culture. So that's why, as a system, the Varnashram system is a superior system. That's what Prabhupada said. Better a Kali worshipper than a good Christian. Because their engagement and connection to the Lord is more close. Like that, because you say, well, the Christian accepts the one God and they're worshiping a demigod, but you ask the Christian, who is God? What does he look like? How he's forming? So then he's just an impersonalist, actually. Monotheistic impersonalist. Yeah, a little contradictory, but, you know, like that. Some of them actually believe God is a person and can develop love for him and that. So that you'll find in the theological circles. Because they know that there's all these kinds of theories. There's even the ones that talk about conjugal relationship with God and this and that. All kinds of stuff's in there. You know, some of them, you know, didn't get the good graces of the church for their philosophies, but, you know, it's there. So it's just ideal because the ritual is more more broad. You know? Islam is specifically for that group of people. Anybody could follow it, but it's specifically for that particular group of people. It was aimed at uplifting that particular group. So you're taking
that ethnic group.
That particular ethnic group, yeah. You know, Judaism is for uplifting that ethnic group. You know, Christ is preaching to those particular people because they're based on eternal principles, eternal religious principles. You can apply it anywhere, but the details of it specifically is for that group. So that's why principles always the most important, because that's applicable anywhere. Because if you look at principle, there won't be any difference between the principles of all the religions in the world, really. But how much they can answer, how deep it can take it, how far they can take you, then you'll find the Vedic literatures from Vedo the farthest. You have something? So therefore it's recommended as the best system. The best system of religion, basically, that works nicest in this age, you know, on the mundane side, is Varnashram. Means, but the topmost understanding of religion is the Bhagavad platform.